Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We are here to explore those questions and maybe learn a little bit along the way. You are listening to The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers.
So excited.
The show that brings you great movie advice and great movie talks. And you know what? We're here to have fun. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and I'm here with my co-host.
I'm your other host, Chad Riley.
Chad Riley.
What?
He's so hot.
And you know what? Today's going to be a special one because you know what? We actually have two guests alongside with us today. We have the illustrious host of Video Game Bang, Mr. Corey Vincent.
What's up, everybody? This is really weird because every time you guys have recorded, I've been in the room.
It's scary. Like we don't even know he's in here.
Like a fly on the wall. And
say
now,
what? You've been here every time?
Every time I'm here. Right behind Eddie.
I told you he was hiding under the table.
That's why I have to stop staring into your eyes, Eddie. I don't notice anything else going on in the room.
So many times I have to bite my tongue. I want to talk and, you know, just jump all in it, but you guys are doing a great job. I'm a big fan of the show, and I'm glad to be here.
And in terms of illustrious, his face is actually shining like a light bulb.
That is true.
Shines bright like a diamond, baby.
Alongside Mr. Corey Vincent, we also have YouTube extraordinaire, Mr. Sean Long.
What up, big kids? I'm so happy to be on the podcast. We're going to be talking a lot of nerdy stuff. So, yeah, wait till you see.
And speaking of nerdy stuff, you know what? We do have a great show in store for you guys today. We actually just came back from seeing a really awesome movie.
Just came back.
Fresh off the boat.
Justice came back.
That is right. Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice. We are literally fresh from the theaters here in studio, ready to record for you guys. So, you know what? We're going to get into it, but we want to let you know we are presented by Mingle Media TV, and we are recording live here at the ever so lovely VGB Studios. Check us out and hear previous episodes now on Audioboom, Stitcher, Libsyn, Player FM, and also you can find us on iTunes. Also, if you can, take a look at our Facebook page and Twitter page at facebook.com/filmlosophers or twitter.com/filmlosophy101. Like us and share if you can. And let's get into a couple things. We're going to hit up a couple little bit of movie news first before we get into the review.
Love that news.
So right off the top, Disney's Zootopia, the non-Pixar feature toon that just won't calm down, has clicked past the $600 million mark worldwide.
So deserves it, man.
It has only been out for 3 weeks, and it has already hit that point. So you know
I believe that's faster than Deadpool. Which, I mean, Deadpool's rated R. Mm-hmm. Zootopia is for families, so that makes sense. But
so don't equate Deadpool and Zootopia all very the same fast. Thing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's great news, and we've seen it, so we can vouch for it. It's
we
a
have
really
seen
great
it. It's very, very cleverly written. I really like the voice actors for the most part. They actually sound like the animals and not just a celebrity reading lines for an animated character. So, well done.
That is true.
I know. I absolutely love the movie. I totally recommend it to people of all ages. Yeah.
All ages.
Mm-hmm.
Even us.
Oh, yeah. I think the older the better.
Especially us, Eddie. Especially us.
Because Zootopia knows how to multiply like rabbits. You know what I'm saying?
That is true.
Yeah. I like it.
Star Wars, Daisy Ridley on the hunt for Lara Croft. Laura Croft rolling Tomb
You're
Raider
Croft
reboot.
Laura.
This is why I stick to video game podcasts, because I come here and now she's Laura Croft macaroni and cheese.
Laura Croft macaroni and cheese.
She's got the blues. Yeah. Oh, bad news, she lost the part, you guys.
Does that mean you have to raid tombs to eat it? Is that how
exactly.
it works?
Star Wars The Force Awakens, Daisy Ridley has confirmed talks to take on the role of Laura Croft in the forthcoming Tomb Raider reboot. So,
you know, they rebooted the video games to, you know, a fairly successful result in terms of the fan community, or well, maybe the non-fans. I don't know. I'm not really a gamer myself, but it looked amazing, and it definitely sold a lot of copies. So
Corey, you've
now
actually
trying to do the movies.
You've actually taken a look at the new video game.
Critically acclaimed is very, very an understatement. People love the game. What makes it great is the character has come so far from the original. Incarnation with the giant boobs and the booty shorts and the glasses.
The pointy ones, the super triangled ones.
Yeah, those polygon boobies. Now they're nice and normal shaped.
Yeah.
And played by the amazing Camilla Luddington.
Oh, she's so
beautiful.
Didn't
they do motion capture for some of that?
She did the facial. She did all the stunts, the facial, the voice. Mm-hmm. Like, she put her heart and soul.
Oh, yeah. She loves the role.
That's why I'm not upset. Daisy Ridley is an up-and-coming star and would probably bring more attendance and buys and money. But Camilla Luddington's been busting her ass for like 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
Give her the shot.
Daisy Ridley's more of the crowd drawer in rather than... Mm-hmm. Because honestly, you say the name and I'm not too familiar with it, but...
Grey's Anatomy. That's also what she's on.
Well, isn't it
there.
So interesting? I mean, once you've got Star Wars, you have instant recognition.
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure that Daisy Ridley has done other movies. She has a filmography that's bigger than Star Wars, even if it's only a couple others, but I certainly don't know what they are. And I'm a big fan, you know, of movies in general, and I think she did a great job in that movie, but that's the only place I know that I've seen her.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Also, speaking of reboots and so forth, Harrison Ford has had some advice for whoever is cast in the Han Solo spinoff film while on The Ellen Show.
Oh, did he now?
What he said was, don't do it.
He's as back to his old tricks.
Oh, yeah. As Ford explained, if history is any judge, the actor will have a grand old time being Han Solo for 25 to 30 years, and then they just let you go. They show you the door.
Oh, what a curmudgeon. They gave him that movie.
I know.
I mean, that movie all the way up until what happens was like 50% his.
Mm-hmm.
And 50% like 5 or 6 other characters.
Do you think he has any liberty in stating the direction of this film? Since he has played Han Solo for so long,
liberty in the direction in terms of
in giving the
what
advice
the film's going to be about, or
saying as far as who's going to be cast
in
it.
Oh no, he doesn't own the character. I mean, he in the popular consciousness, he owns the character for sure, but he does not financially own the character. So no, I wouldn't confer with him necessarily if I were Disney.
I just imagine Han Solo, like, you see that thing with Shia LaBeouf saying, just do it, and then Han Solo, I mean, like, Harrison Ford comes in, it's like, don't do it, you know? Like, I just imagine, like, him over, like, especially because the whole Indiana Jones, you know, Mud Williams thing, I thought that would be a great connection if they did that.
I thought his role as Han Solo has been so weird because it's probably the thing he's most known for, and it's like that band who doesn't want to play the hit that everyone wants to hear them play it's not the one that he put his soul into, you know?
Nirvana.
Nirvana. Play the damn song. Put on the vest, you monkey, and then do the role and then get out. I think it was really weird that before the new Star Wars came out, he kind of had this change of heart and he was like playing around with the character, and then given what happens, it all makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, it's hit or miss when it comes to whether or not you understand what Harrison Ford is really doing. Honestly, I do agree. Chad made a note earlier before we started the show stating that Harrison Ford may actually be the next Clint Eastwood.
Yes.
The next curmudgeon-y individual.
Oh, he's totally the up-and-coming curmudgeon of Hollywood.
Oh, yeah.
But
Clint Eastwood, Tommy Lee Jones, Harrison Ford.
There you go.
John Hamm.
And speaking of John Hamm, we're going to go ahead and switch into our special feature of our movie review, which is...
Dun, 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 dun.
In a world where 4 guys sit at a table.
Talk about John Hamm.
Crafting.
From the finest of woods Lowe's had to offer.
I love Hans Zimmer.
We bring to you our review of Batman versus Superman. Oh, yeah.
I feel like this music is a little misleading still, but promise that it really does connect.
It does.
Picture this. You're in a big cornfield. You're looking up at the stars.
Uh-oh, Hans Zimmer is about to drop the beat.
And then an alien spacecraft lands right on your head, and you're dead.
That is not what happens in this movie. Nor is John Hamm in the movie. I'm still stuck on John Hamm.
I know.
We'll come back to him later.
Are we sure he wasn't
in
the
movie?
I know
that we're going to come back to him later.
Well, see, here's the thing, is that, you know what? I think I spent a good 2 hours listening to Corey say that John Hamm should have had some role in the film. So for me, it segues. It works.
I do
for
believe
me.
Before the film, you were saying you wanted John Hamm to play Batman, right?
Doctor Strange? He can play everything. I want him to be everything.
Well, that's true. You did
Wolverine,
say pretty much every
Deadpool.
Role.
Deadpool. Bring it on.
Deadpool?
Give it to the Hamm.
Give it to the Hamm.
Give it to the Hamm. All right, so just to confirm, John Hamm is not in this film that we know of.
That we know of.
There is a lot in the movie, though. It's 2.5 powerful hours long, It is, I mean, it is chock full of story beats, character development, anti-development, what have you. The way that we're going to structure this talk, just so everybody's in the same loop together, is we're initially going to be presenting a non-spoiler review. So we're going to spend a few minutes talking about overall themes, impressions, you know, all the things that we thought about how they did the characters, without giving you specific plot point details. We are going to give a spoiler review after the credits. So stick around afterward if you want to hear spoiler-rich content, because the embargo has lifted, but we want to respect the desires of numerous moviegoers who actually don't want to be spoiled. So we're going to do spoiler-free first and then follow up with spoilers later on.
So ultimately, like any good Marvel movie, stay after the credits and you'll get something good, not like a DC film. But anyway,
is that confirmed? Confirmed that there's nothing in it when in the actual theatrical release?
I was gonna say
out?
When you see a pre-screening like we did, sometimes they don't include stuff that will make it if you pay for the ticket.
So that we know of, there wasn't anything at the end.
Zack
so
Snyder has said that there's not gonna be a post-credit scene.
Yeah,
he doesn't want to follow in Marvel's footsteps specifically.
Mm-hmm. But yes, folks, we are talking about Batman vs Superman: Dawn of Justice, the film that comes out this Friday, and we got a chance to get a preview of it. And you know, there are some differing opinions about it, and that's what they are. They are opinions. There are our own thoughts, there are our own ideas about the film, and you know, we're just going to share them with you. So just to kind of keep you up to beat, as far as if you've been living under a rock, the official synopsis according to IMDb says, fearing the actions of Superman are left unchecked, Batman takes on the Man of Steel while the world wrestles with what kind of a hero it really needs. With Batman and Superman fighting each other, a new threat, Doomsday, is created by Lex Luthor. It's up to Superman and Batman to set aside their differences along with Wonder Woman to stop Lex Luthor and Doomsday from destroying Metropolis. I'd say that about sums up what we've seen in trailers, what we've seen in
yeah, no surprises there.
There's no surprises
if you
there.
If we're spoiled by anything there, it just means that you haven't been watching television.
Or, yeah, exactly, or you haven't been on the internet.
You haven't been seeking out this content. I think a good place to start is Man of Steel, because this movie very directly borrows from Man of Steel, and hopefully by this point, if you wanted to see it, you have seen it. Regardless of whether you liked it or not. But the events of that movie directly influence essentially where this one starts. There's a brief sequence that kind of reiterates Batman's origin story, Bruce Wayne's the murder of his parents and everything. We've seen that in some of the teasers that have already come out, so no spoiling there. But then immediately moves into the climactic battle between nearly Superman, Clark Kent, and General Zod from the end of Man of Steel, from the last, you know, 30 minutes end of Man of Steel. It was a long battle in that film.
So ultimately we get the where that trailer scene where you see Bruce Wayne running into the rubble and so forth. So that's something that's not out of the ordinary. I would assume people understand that's part of the film. They've seen the trailer.
Yeah, the dust cloud that he runs into is that
somehow
Metropolis
does not
falling
kill him
apart
instantly.
Mm-hmm. Honestly, that was my first thought. I mean, even when you see the trailer, you know, you see something falling, you see something huge happening. You don't normally run right into it. I would assume, especially if you're dressed in like a tux and or like a suit and everything, you're running right into a falling building kind of deal. But you know what? Hey, he's Bruce Wayne.
We have
Wayne.
To suspend, a degree of disbelief, because this is, after all, a movie that is about an alien from space who can somehow fly and shoot laser beams out of his eyes. So,
and the sequence in particular involves a giant spaceship that's like just slamming buildings to the ground.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right off the top, you know, with the opening and the way the film goes, Sean, how did you feel as far as that being the beginning of this film? How did you feel as far as the, you know, this kind of being the origin of Batman's angst, I guess you could call it, towards Superman?
Oh, yeah. I thought they did a really great job, I think. I know that we've seen so many times, I think, in the movie universe, at least three times before this, Bruce Wayne's parents dying. We saw him in Batman 89, Batman Forever, and then Batman Begins. So this was the fourth time. And one thing I said in my non-spoiler review on YouTube, it was funny that Lauren Cohen and Jeffrey Dean Morgan play his parents, because that's Maggie and Negan on The Walking Dead. So I thought that was funny. But But going in, back into the movie, it's
I thought she looked familiar.
Yeah, yeah. It's both Walking Dead cast members, and of course, you know, Jeffrey Dean Morgan was the comedian. Another Zack Snyder film.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the movie really set up the tone. It sets up this thing. This is definitely non-spoiler, but a whole dream sequence going throughout the film with Bruce. So that was the first thing. It's because it starts out with that. You know, like the tragic event, but then it becomes like more of a dream as it goes on. And then going into the whole Man of Steel climax with Zod, I thought it was really great. And also kind of coming from a normal person, seeing it traumatically from a on the ground level when it happens, mm-hmm. it's like even more terrifying, because when you see it from Superman's point of view, when he's going through buildings, you know he's okay. But it, you know that, oh, crap. People are probably dying, and it's like all this collateral damage. And yeah, from Bruce's point of view, it's I would be scared out of my mind. And so I really convey that really good.
And you know what? That's really true. We were asked a question while we were in line. We had a friend who was also with us asked us, you know, how would you feel if you had heard that there was this entity, this humanoid individual that came in and came to Earth and was showing the superhuman abilities and all that, and how would you feel as a human, you know, with that type of mindset? And you know, it really started out that, you know, you could really see the fear in the people. You really mm-hmm. That opening scene really conveyed a lot of that mindset that mm-hmm. we had talked about while in line, and I thought that was done really well. I don't know, what did you think, Chad?
Yeah, I thought that it really put you, it gave you that boots on the ground experience, which is very different from when you're flying up in the sky, bouncing from one building to the next as the superpowered individuals. The other thing that it really did for me was established Bruce Wayne, not yet the Batman side of him, but Bruce Wayne as a character in this cinematic universe. Gotham and Metropolis are across a small body of water from each other.
Yeah,
they are like next door neighbors, and Zack Snyder said that months and months and months ago. So that's not a spoil. So you have a Bruce Wayne who saw things happening with a giant alien spaceship right next door in Metropolis. He hopped on a helicopter, flew across that body of water, got into a car, drove into the chaos to get to the building with all of his workers that work for Wayne Financial. And so it really does a lot very quickly to build that rapport with the audience mm-hmm. for his version of Bruce Wayne, if not yet Batman. But I think you do still see glimmers of that kind of forward momentum, sort of aggressive characteristic that drives the Batman side of him as well. That really does come out while he's, you know, in his three-piece suit without the jacket or whatever. Corey, what'd you think?
I dug it. That was one of the parts of the movie I really liked. I like the opposite perspective of seeing it from the ground. I actually have often thought about this in other movies, like, you know, especially, you know, Marvel has a cinematic universe. When they do all these devastating events, it's cool to see the aftermath. They do it a little bit in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but I've always wondered, like, you know, what was Daredevil doing, you know, when the aliens came?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that would be awesome to know. It could be its own little short.
Mm-hmm.
You do that with all the heroes when you think about it, but actually getting to see that, you know, there was a lot more going on. And Bruce Wayne, it does establish that he has a big heart, that he actually cares when he saves the little girl. Although some of it panned out a little into the cheese factor and was wicked unbelievable. I got the point. It was good. I liked the idea of it, and I liked what it did for the Bruce Wayne character.
Yeah, it's kind of like a let's get the audience on his side real quick.
Yeah.
I thought it was, honestly, I liked the scene, but I thought the way it went about, it was almost like an easy way to kind of do that whole, you know, rally for America kind of deal. I thought it was okay. I wasn't too sold on it because the sequence just screamed just insanity as far as everything going on, and then somebody still driving into it and driving through it and foregoing every single blockade that seemed to happen and then running into...
Well, you know why.
Mm-hmm. He's Batman.
Yeah.
Because I'm Batman.
So, you know, that was okay. So we fast forward the film, and, you know, obviously the we're not going to get into too many specifics here, but the film does pick up right after that, a year and a half later, and we're into the realm where you're starting to see a lot of what you see in the trailer. You see a lot of what Batman, I mean, what Superman does as far as him saving people, him doing the things, all the things that you've seen in the trailer. And then you see Batman in his element taking down someone, and you see that scene in the trailer where there is some guy tied up and he's got a brand of Batman and so forth. And so it establishes that both heroes are pretty much busy. They're well into their, you know, night jobs, as you could say. Now, with those scenes right off the cuff, did anybody have any, I don't know, reservations as regards to how they portrayed Batman right off? I mean, for me, it seemed like Batman kind of went a little nuts.
I don't know, in this movie, I mentioned it a couple minutes ago, Batman is very aggressive.
Yeah.
He's a very strong personality.
Oh, yeah.
In this film. I don't know. I'd have to see it again to really gauge how much of that aggressiveness was there from the first moment. There is kind of a, I don't know, like a haunted house sort of a sequence. It's not a haunted house, but it's kind of, you know, dark, and he's up in a corner and people don't know that he's there at first. And then he moves really quickly and there's gunfire and all kinds of craziness. But yeah, I think that most of the kind of that propulsive aggressiveness happens after that point. The point where you kind of first see him in his element, yeah. You know, interrogating a criminal, let's say, in a dark place, in rundown area of Gotham. That is kind of par for the course. It was an expected Batman moment. There are things that happen later that I would say I did not expect.
Mm-hmm.
The level of commitment that this Batman has to his quest.
And speaking of commitment, we've talked about this a little bit ago, Corey. How did you feel as far as right off the cuff, right off when you, like I said, when we first started, how did that Batman come off to you?
I was a giant Bale fan. I loved the Dark Knight series, so I kind of had to remind myself, okay, don't get your hopes up, because the Dark Knight, they set him up for three fantastic movies and told a beautiful origin story that really established how Christian Bale Batman became. So I had to throw all that out the window, and that was hard because it's still kind of fresh. One thing I will say is that Ben Affleck does not ruin the movie in any way, shape, or form. I think he did as good a job as he could have given the circumstances of the role. One thing, I just think they wrote Batman like, and with no specific detail, I feel like Bruce Wayne, the differentiation between Bruce Wayne and Batman is usually pretty extreme when other people take the helm, especially Bale. Like, you know, when he's Bruce Wayne, he's kind of a jerk, like kind of cocky, sure. A little even, you know, Tony Stark-ish. Mm-hmm. You know, he's kind of goofy-ish.
The billionaire.
He kind of puts it on. He lays it on heavy with the...
kind of acts like he's dumb. He plays dumb, you know, to some degree. And then when he's Batman, he's all business. This one, it seemed like Batman and Bruce Wayne were both the same guy. Like, he was brooding in pretty much every scene. And, like, the one espionage thing he did as Bruce Wayne, it felt clumsy. He got...
We'll get into that, because I do want to talk about that for a second. And like I said, this is non-spoiler, so this is all in the trailer kind of deal.
Yeah.
Sean, right in that opening scene with Batman, I thought personally that although he was pretty aggressive, I thought the way they actually allowed him to move, and it was almost like it was fluid.
Yes.
Like he had been doing this for years, because this is older in his age. How did you feel as far as seeing Batman, you know, with that first time seeing him on the screen, and seeing the way they allowed him to be portrayed as far as, you know, he almost like a Catwoman, pretty much.
Oh, yeah. I think they did an excellent job with portraying this as a more grizzled, weathered, experienced Batman. They mentioned throughout the movie he's been doing this for 20 years. So this is not like in Batman Begins or The Dark Knight. And funny about the Dark Knight trilogy, he's only Batman really for like a year or so, and then like he takes an 8-year break, and then, you know, that's the only thing I didn't like about the Dark Knight trilogy, is that he's only Batman for a short time and then takes a break because of, you know,
his back or something.
Oh no, because of the lie, you know, that's going back.
He takes the fall.
That's exactly. That's right. But this one was very much inspired by, you know, Frank Miller's The Dark Knight Returns, but except from, you know, of course, it's very different. You know, it's the movie universe. But I do like that this Batman, for lack of a better word, he didn't give a crap when it came to the criminals. He just like, you know what, I'm going to do whatever it takes. And he does. And I like that.
And it does seem like he's moving in out of desperation now at this point. He's mm-hmm. like, you know what? The scum is scum. It all needs to be put away. It needs to be. And that seems pretty on as far as where The Dark Knight Returns, which is, like you said, this is what it's based off of. That seems to be in the right mindset as that. Moving forward, as far as what Corey was saying, when you get into that scene where, in the trailer, you have the first meetup of Clark Kent and Bruce Wayne.
Mm-hmm.
And... mind you,
Lex Luthor.
The exchange between the two is, it's fine. It works for me. I don't know about you guys, but that exchange between the two when they first meet, it worked out for me. The whole, well, you know, the vigilante in Gotham is, you know, just running rampant and some blah blah blah. And he's like, well, that's pretty hypocritical, seeing as it's coming from somebody who writes for the Daily Planet, who's all up on Superman's stuff.
Yeah, you're Superman's mm-hmm. fanboys mm-hmm. over at the Daily Planet. I think that the thing that was most compelling for me about that entire sequence is there's quite a bit more going on in that scene than the trailer lets you know about.
Oh, yeah.
There are other elements happening concurrently with that meeting that I thought made it, you know, because sometimes you think, oh, the special moments of the movie get teased too clearly in trailers mm-hmm. and then you see that sequence and you're like, I saw that before, it's not really as special as it could have been. I thought they did a good job of teasing the sequence without telling you essentially what's actually going on during that entire set of scenes.
Yeah.
And speaking of teasing, Corey was alluding to some espionage. We do get to see a little bit of Bruce Wayne acting like James Bond in this one. Mm-hmm. And
a little bit,
yeah,
except not. Like, he had one job, Bruce, you know,
just
acquire what you need to acquire and get out. And he got caught by Paul Blart. He got caught by, you know, henchman number two, and then ended up, I felt like just Bruce was a little reckless. Like, the Batman that I love is calculated. Everything he does is a science. He doesn't make mistakes. There's no room for error.
Especially after 20 years of doing this sort of thing.
Yeah, he is, like, cold, calculated, and just brilliant. And I feel like he was a little sloppy in this one. Like, I don't know.
What do you think, Sean?
Well, you know, they kind of show in the movie. It's also shown in the trailer. You know, you see Bruce look at the Robin suit that has like Joker writing on it, and I think they were alluding that even though he's been doing it for a long time, he did, you know, kind of take a break. And I think they were alluding also that Superman brought him out. You know, just like how in The Dark Knight Returns, like he kind of came out of retirement. He kind of like put up the cowl for a bit because of, you know, losing someone he cared about, like Robin. So I feel like, and he mentions he is older. He's not as, you know, young as he was. So, I think they were trying to establish that even though he's experienced, and you do see that experience and you see that fluidity in his fighting style, I also know that, you know, he's, you know, so weathered from all he's been through that he's not as calculated as Corey said, and as probably thinking things as clearly as it was, because he's just kind of fed up. And he's also just like, his age, his just being through all the trauma he's probably went through. And I'm pretty sure Suicide Squad will show a little bit of that, of Joker and Batman's, you know, little backstory too. So, well, there's so much.
I mean, anybody spending 20 years doing that kind of activity, losing sleep over it.
Yes.
Because, you know, Batman works at night, of course. That's when the criminal element is at large.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was really interesting, though, how they kind of do juxtapose that weathered, overly experienced, overly seasoned Batman with a very young, still learning his way in the world Superman.
Mm-hmm.
Because the first half of this film is a tremendous philosophical debate, the beginning of a philosophical debate on kind of, Eddie, what you were alluding to earlier. Let's pretend like some extraterrestrial humanoid individual comes to Earth, can do things that no human being can do. How does society respond to someone like that? And the first half of this film really does a good job of exploring a lot of the nuances. Mm-hmm. What would the government think about it? What would another kind of seasoned combat veteran, hero person, vigilante like Batman think of it? What would Lois Lane think about it? What mm-hmm. would the Daily Planet write about it? What would Clark Kent feel about his Superman persona? There's a lot of that that goes on in the first half of the film. Unfortunately, I think one of the weaker parts of the plot is that it doesn't really pay off that through line. It kind of gets into, you know, superheroics and battle mm-hmm. sequences in the second half, which are fulfilling in their own way. But, you know, they do this tremendous setup and then just kind of leave it there. You it just kind of leaves hanging.
You said that before we recorded, and that really struck with me. They did dedicate a lot of the first half of the movie and then some to setting up these plot lines. And then after the action sequences, it all just kind of took care of itself.
Yeah, it resolved itself for some reason.
And the movie's over.
They had an underground meeting, and everybody was cool.
Well, once we get into spoiler territory, I think the big thing that happens kind of diffused all that. And I'll get to why.
Yeah, and we'll get to that. But just kind of going back to what we were mentioning as far as when it came to Bruce Wayne, I do think Sean has a point when it comes to he is older. He is getting to that point. I think substituting, though, however, a more aggressive yet not as fundamental, I guess you could say, or logistical type of Batman is what Zack Snyder wanted to do, and removing out the whole kind of like, okay, if you've followed the Frank Miller Dark Knight Returns, mm-hmm. there's a sequence in it when he gets back out of it, when he first comes out of retirement and he's going after a gang that belongs to Two-Face, and he chases them into this creaky old building. And they start freaking out because they're like, dude, he's never made noise before. What's going on? And you see the struggle of Bruce Wayne going through like, ugh. Like he's older, so it's rougher for him. I think that was the translation they were trying to do with this, where they were making Bruce Wayne that type of physique. I guess you could say that type of status in life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where
I was going to say, if you're talking physique, he's a big burly dude. Oh, yeah. And they do a sequence of what
they do
what
a montage.
Bruce Wayne
Rocky
does
montage, man, yeah.
To keep the Batman bod, and mm-hmm. it looks painful.
I what is it? The
it's like how they have dad bod. He had bat bod.
Yeah. You know, they pretty much traded out the old Batman for the Batman that is pretty well personified in the comic book graphic novel series. Where
yeah, I mean, aside from the fact that they didn't make him old enough,
they didn't make
he,
him.
He does parallel the Dark Knight Returns version of Batman fairly well. You know, sans sidekick, you know, about 20 years younger than that version is in the graphic novel, but they do that sort of gruff, grizzled, I'm done with this, I'm tired of this, all these shenanigans, I'm just going to mm-hmm. deal with it, you know, kind of approach.
Yeah. Because I the funny thing is, going back to The Dark Knight Rises, which was also taking a bunch from The Dark Knight Returns, in this one, Batman v Superman, he's supposed to be about 45 because, you know, 20 years, 25 is when he started as Batman. And then, but Bruce Wayne was like about, what, 38 in The Dark Knight Returns, so that was 8-year difference because he was like 30, yeah. Like, so I thought it was funny that neither version made him as old as in The Dark Knight Returns, but this one was I think catering more towards that in physique and grizzliness, even though he didn't have the beard. That it's like, okay, I'm coming out of retirement and shaving it off, and then The Dark Knight Rises actually did that
part. I have a question, mm-hmm. if I may.
Mm-hmm. By all means,
go
hosts,
for it.
Hosts, okay. The
we
villains.
Have answers. Let's we talk always about, have answers.
Let's mm-hmm. talk about the villains.
Yes,
we knew Jesse Eisenberg was going to be bad, right? Yeah. But did we think he was going to be this bad? Or do you think they're saving grace in there? Because I do not think that character was anything I was hoping to be Lex Luthor.
My biggest thing was, so obviously with everybody watching Daredevil nowadays, you have the reminiscent, you know, view of Wilson Fisk. In the first season, I liked Wilson Fisk. I liked Vincent D'Onofrio playing that. And that evolution of that character as it went through the show was insanely well done.
Mm-hmm.
I was hoping to see that same thing with this as far as an evolution of a buildup of a character that really just makes its presence known by the end of the film, and all we got was a bald head.
He kept the same persona. I was hoping for an evolution where at the end you're like, now he's Lex Luthor and he's gonna, you know, get more serious. but he kept the whole kind of a psychopath angle.
Yeah, and it doesn't play much on it in the trailers, unfortunately, which I think that would have been a good idea to note. Like, hey, you know, by the way, you know, this Lex Luthor's got a few screws loose. But, Chad, what did you think as far as...
Oh, I thought the trailers told you exactly what to expect from him. And you hoped beyond all reason that they would pull a fast one on you and make him an actual Lex Luthor character. He's not. He's a Batman villain who is several screws loose in his noggin and stays that way the whole time. But I think that they were very clear about that in the trailers. It's red just sort of that. It's that, yeah, the red. Oh, man. That first introduction to the sound of his voice, the attitude that he has. It just, to me, I am not as much a DC fan as I am a Marvel fan, but I'm very familiar with the main characters, Superman, Batman, to a lesser extent, Wonder Woman, who, by the way, was phenomenal in this film. Oh, yeah.
Highlight of the movie.
We'll get to her probably a lot in the spoilers. Yep. But. So I'm familiar with Lex Luthor. I watched a bit of, you know, Smallville and there was a different take on him there, but it still felt like Lex Luthor. This guy does not feel like that guy at all. The cartoons do a better job with Lex Luthor than this. But I think that the trailers didn't lie to us. They gave us exactly what the trailer said he was going to be like.
What do you think of Lex, Sean?
Oh yeah, I even said in my non-spoiler review that his take is probably not my favorite. I still love the Superman animated series Clancy Brown one the best. I knew with his casting and what they were trying to do, it was going to be my least favorite part of the film. And yeah, like I don't think he's the greatest movie villain of all time, but he definitely had a very sinister, very psychopath. Like it kind of reminded me of Kilgrave in a way from Jessica Jones. Yeah, he had that very much. Like he's just like this very evil. Like his motivations are all over the place, but you can see what he's trying to do, but at the same time, he's just kind of off, and he's just, you know, playful and very nervous and very awkward. But I didn't think he was like bad, but yeah, he's definitely not my favorite incarnation of Lex Luthor. But yeah, he definitely was very sinister.
Well, speaking of Lex Luthor and seeing as how anybody else could have played it and done well, we're actually going to do a special feature right in here called Fantasy Cast.
Oh, okay. Right.
Yes, in this special feature, guys, we are going to go around the table, and I'm going to give each and every one of you a specific character that is in the movie, one that's well done or not well done, however you want to put it, and I want to see what your take is on an alternate casting for this particular character. Now, we're not going to be, you know, specific as far as, you know, oh, well, Sean's going to get this one or whatever. We're just going to go random.
Shotgun
as heck.
Shotgun it. I like it.
So, here we go. Chad, Wonder Woman.
See, I'm not prepared for this. I liked Wonder Woman. Yeah. I would not actually replace her with anybody. Mm-hmm. I have other people I would replace, but I'll let you go ahead and shotgun somebody else.
Yeah. So, I'll take that one.
There you go. Wonder Woman
should have been from the beginning.
Jessica Alba.
No. Will always be the Wonder Woman of my heart, Gina Carano.
Oh.
Former Strike Force women's 145-pound champion. And actually, I think she's dating or with the Superman actor.
Yeah, like Henry Cavill? 2 years ago they dated. And
is that over?
That's a big reason why she was in the movie.
When she was gunning for the part, there's a chance.
Back when she was gunning for the part, they were dating.
Oh, really?
They gave it to another. So
she killed it in Deadpool, so she's doing okay. I don't know if she has the acting chops to pull off Wonder Woman. I think the Wonder Woman that was in there was amazing.
Gal Gadot.
Yeah.
But this is strictly fantasy. If I had to choose, gun to my head, I love Gina Carano. I think she's got that Amazon physique. She could have knocked it out.
Gina Carano, there you go for Wonder Woman. Sean, let's hear your take on Superman.
Oh, on Superman? I was going to say Lex Luthor, but, you know, but, okay, for Superman, man, that's,
This roulette version is a little...
Yeah, that's the way it works.
Difficult.
Dang.
You either sink or swim.
You know, it's so funny. If he wasn't actually stuck with Marvel twice, I would say Chris Evans would have been a great Captain America. Mm. I mean, you know, Superman.
Superman?
Chris Evans would have been a great Captain America. Yeah, there you go.
I could see him being a great Captain America.
That.
But no, because I've actually met him, and he definitely has that all-American.
All-American-American kind of vibe.
And the physique. And he definitely, it's so funny that he is Cap, because it really parallels Superman and, like, with Civil War going on. And I feel like always when I watch those, like, you know, Iron Man is Batman and Captain America is Superman. So, yeah, that's why I always
you see the parallels
yeah.
with mm-hmm. it.
Exactly.
Chadley.
See, I think, hold on. I want to.
Oh.
I'm going to pull a fast one on you.
By all means.
This is just for sheer, like, fanboy odd geekiness. I would cast Liam Hemsworth to give it a try. So that someday
as Batman, as Superman,
so someday you could have a battle of the gods between him and his brother as Thor.
Oh, Lord above.
Oh man.
Well, speaking of which, all right. Chad, Batman.
Ooh, Batman.
Now, mind goodness. You, this doesn't say yes or no as far as if you liked it or not. I'm just this is
yeah,
just
no,
to say.
I think we covered earlier off air before we started recording, I had made a comment that I think, given the way that Batman is presented in this story, I think that Ben Affleck was very effective in
yes.
the part. Was it my favorite Batman? No. Who would I put there instead?
Any ideas?
I don't know. I've always been at a loss, to be honest with you. Ever since they cast Ben Affleck and people started raging against the machine, I said, well, I don't know who else would... Mm-hmm. I don't know who I would put in that. I mean, Christian Bale wasn't all that long ago, so it's kind of difficult to switch gears that quickly, especially because this Batman is an older Batman, mm-hmm. so it could have been him the whole time.
So then let me kind of change it up for you then a little bit. What about the Batman role as an older Batman role?
No doubt Clint Eastwood.
Clint Eastwood.
Yeah.
If this was actual
hey,
Dark Knight Returns,
he's
going to
be old
Batman,
man Logan.
Clint Eastwood.
I couldn't imagine Clint Eastwood with the claws like, hey, you over there. You know, kind of
make my day.
Make my day.
You can't
yeah,
Michael
Clint
Keaton.
Eastwood in a giant robot suit. I could do the giant robot suit with him.
I'll go ahead and take Lex Luthor. My fan casting, which has always been from the very beginning, which is somebody I had actually really wanted to see, and I was hopeful. Actually, a lot of people began pulling for it. Bryan Cranston
That's what I was gonna
as
say.
Lex Luthor.
Yeah, I
Bryan Cranston could play the heck out of that role.
Yeah. He would have been perfect.
He would have been perfect. If you've seen him in Breaking Bad.
Bryan Cranston would have done a great job as Lex Luthor.
Ever since
Not
Breaking
the role
Bad.
That's in this movie.
Yeah.
Yes.
We'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a minute. But that is our thoughts for Batman vs. Superman Dawn of Justice. Of course, you have your own opinions. By all means, let us know in the comments on our Facebook page and Twitter page when we post this. And you know what? Check out all, of course, previous episodes, like we said, on those pages as well. From guys here at the Film Philosophers.
Well, we got to let us plug our stuff, bro.
Sean
Long.
Oh, yeah.
Talk about your YouTubes.
Oh, yeah. Everything YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram is Sean X Long, SeanXLong. I do toy reviews, movie reviews, video game stuff, parodies. So make sure to check it out. And I'm at a lot of conventions like WonderCon, and I'll be at San Diego Comic Con, and so many others.
Sean's explained to us that his schedule is super busy. So
Sean is like
and if you're
the
at the
friendliest
con,
guy. Go say hi to Sean.
Oh, just go look for Marty McFly.
Yes.
And Corey, where can we find your stuff at?
Find me in South Central rolling on dubs. You can see me on nerdreactor.com, Video Game Bang, VGB Studios, iTunes, all that good stuff.
And, of course, for myself and Chad Riley, we want to thank you for listening to the Film Philosophers. And you know what? We will see you on the next show.
Or just stick around and listen to the spoiler version.
Or stick around and listen to the spoiler version.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Well, don't go yet. We still got our spoiler-rich review to go up right now.
That's right. So many things to spoil with this movie and so little time.
So little time. But you know what? We're going to start right at the top with that opening sequence.
So we can spoil everything, right?
We can spoil everything,
Fair warning. We're spoiling stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, just so
you
don't know.
If you don't want it spoiled, stop listening. Come back after you've seen it.
Which would be on Friday. Which, I mean, if you want to wait till Friday. And
or you could go Thursday evening.
Or you can go Thursday evening.
I mean, true fans.
But yes, this is going to be filled with spoilers.
Spoiler.
Fair warning right now. Spoilers. Spoilers. Did I mention spoilers?
Good.
I think it's fully spoilers. Dawn of spoilers. So right at the top, let's go ahead and start at the beginning of the film. So we're talking about that opening sequence. We talked about, we just mentioned about the... killing of Bruce Wayne's parents. So you see that right at the beginning.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, there's no spoilers there.
Corey, you had mentioned something about the way the scene was shot and how long they spent on it.
A perfect amount of time. We've seen it so many times. We didn't need to go way into depth. It was nice little, most movies will do something interesting, like while the credits. This was like credits still rolling type of deal just to get you set into the Batman. Who needed the most setup anyways since we didn't know what we were getting?
Yeah, and I think people know, like you said, we've seen it so many times. People know the origin of how Batman, you know, got started, that how his parents died and so forth. I think the idea of them not spending so much time on it was kind of the way the film should have moved through everything.
Yeah, I was totally ready for it to be done when the credits were done, because it's a story that we all know. Even if you're not a huge fan of the genre or Batman particularly, you already know it, so you shouldn't spend very long on it. It was beautifully filmed.
Mm-hmm.
The cinematography of the sequence was really well done, like, in many parts.
Almost out of place. It was so good.
It did seem out of place. Okay, I wasn't the only one who felt like that.
Yeah, like with the scene with the pearls falling onto the ground and into the gutter. Like, that was shot to perfection. That was like an art project.
Yeah.
I think that, though, there are several sequences like that in the movie. It was really noticeable in the beginning, but they have multiple times in this film where they do a very slow, elegiac, painting-like sequence, like at least six or seven times, I'd say, over the course of the 2.5 hours.
Oh, no, Zack Snyder's been known for that. He's a very visual style director, so he definitely has some very artsy, beautiful shots in a very action-packed films that he does. I noticed that in a lot of his films, Man of Steel, Watchmen, Sucker Punch, all those films have like very...
It really helps with the pace when you have such a driving plot that's very action-oriented.
Mm-hmm.
It helps to kind of transition from one sequence to another. He has a couple different styles he uses in this film.
Yeah.
One of them is that slow, elegiac, you know, almost like visual poetry motif.
Yes.
The other one is the dream sequences, which are mostly Batman's, or well, Bruce Wayne's dream sequences. But that's also kind of, it really stirs the pot, because you don't know when those things start that it's a dream sequence.
Oh, yeah.
You're just like catapulted into some other version of reality for any number of minutes, and then, you know, Bruce Wayne jolts awake.
That's right. So, you know, let's, since you mentioned the dream sequence, let's go ahead and start with the first dream sequence that we talked about, or that the film talked about. So obviously we talked about the synopsis of the film earlier. Batman has issues with Bruce Wayne. Batman has issues with Superman. And in the first dream sequence that we get, it's essentially Bruce as a child. Right. And we see him as their... is it all part of the same sequence when his parents die?
Yeah, I feel like it's kind of giving a backstory while being a dream. Like, he's talking about...
I'd call that more of a memory than, it's than a memory. Dream.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, no, because then he essentially falls down. So they're taking the bodies to... taking the bodies to the family burial place.
And he runs into the woods.
He runs off and he falls into a hole, and a swarm of bats surround him.
That's true. You're right. His memory is a little different.
So was
he says the way I remember it,
I didn't
like
that.
The bats lifted me up.
As someone who went into this with a pretty pessimistic outlook, that was a early jolt. My first like red flag where I was like, oh, this is gonna suck. And don't get me wrong, I don't think the movie sucked by the time it all was said and done.
Since we're spoiling, can we tell people what is happening that may have sucked?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, right? The bats lifting him up.
Kind of work themselves into a frenzy and turn into a funnel that starts lifting young Bruce Wayne back up to the entrance of the shaft that he's fallen into.
Yeah. When I found out it was a dream, it went from a red flag back to a yellow flag. I was like, okay.
Yeah, that is true.
If it's a dream, if this is based in realism and you're trying to tell me that these bats just randomly flew this kid back up, I was going to be a little pissed. But then when it was a dream, I gave it, okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
But they weren't just any bats. They were Bruce Wayne's bats.
Yeah.
You're Bruce Wayne's bats.
They're the bats of his memory.
Well, yeah.
He has a voiceover
that
explains it.
Yeah, because it definitely, that's how I felt initially. It's like, wait, is this like what really happens? This is like a real memory, and then it's like, oh, it's a dream. It's like, oh, okay, it's a beautiful lie, you know, and like that's what he was saying.
It's a beautiful
lie.
Now, I would say what's far more compelling in terms of the dreams is the second one. What I remember is the second one, which we've seen in the trailers already, where Superman comes into some kind of a desert shaft and pulls the cowl off of Batman's head. He's kind of in his like desert camo gear, if you
Nightmare
will.
Nightmare Batman, as they call him. So.
and you don't know. When you're first dropped into the sequence, you know something's off because it doesn't match what's been happening like immediately before.
Mm-hmm.
Batman is suddenly in a desert. There's a city that's on fire from something floating in the sky above it. And he's trying to capture kryptonite. which has been previously established by this point. There's a big chunk of kryptonite out there that was recovered from the Indian Ocean, from the, you know, kind of the other half of the whole alien ship from Man of Steel, where they tried to trap Superman at the base
that world
of the
changer.
Ocean.
Yeah, the world builder.
World builder.
Yeah.
So there's a huge rock of kryptonite that has been recovered. And then you're kind of, once Batman kind of catches wind of it and is interested in procuring it, you're immediately dropped into this futuristic dream sequence. He has like shock troops with the Superman insignia on their shoulder pads attacking him and the people around him, and ultimately gets captured by them. And then Superman drops in, is a super bad guy. And then Bruce Wayne wakes up. And then you have a sequence involving a what appears to be a time-traveling Flash from the future telling Bruce Wayne, after he's woken up, several things. And then Bruce Wayne wakes up for real. Inception. I thought that was very compelling because at this point, Bruce Wayne, it's established later, Bruce Wayne does not know Barry Allen, The Flash, time travel, Speed Force, nothing like that. So that part could not have entirely been a dream.
Yep.
Oh, I just connected a major dot.
I know. I love that part, actually. It was really cool. And one thing going back into that dream sequence, notice that there's a big symbol that's in that city, which I think is Metropolis or Gotham.
Yeah, it looks like it's Metropolis.
It's like the ocean part between them is dried up.
Yep.
And it's a wasteland.
And it's a Omega symbol, which is Darkseid.
Darkseid symbol.
And that was Parademons attacking Batman and the troopers. You know, Bruce or Batman gets totally knocked out by a Parademon, which is awesome. Or at least they pretty much
are trying to enhance it. It's pretty much spelled in black and white as far as what those are, with the symbol there, with what you see in the background, and then the Parademons that are there. I think it's kind of on the nose that those are Parademons. But you were saying something about connecting dots?
Yeah.
Well, I remember me and you had a conversation on kind of the ending, as fast forwarding a little bit, and you know they're kind of coming to terms that we need to start a supergroup, and they're like, "Well, why?" You know, because I'm thinking, "Why? You just took out what would probably be the biggest threat."
Yeah.
You know, and he goes, "I just have a feeling." The feeling was the dream sequence, probably with the Flash,
which isn't really a dream sequence because he has no reason to know any of that stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or the Flash.
So then that draws up the question then, where did it come from?
Well, apparently the Speed Force has some kind of telepathic property as well, which I'm not super familiar with the Flash storyline for the whole history of his, you know, publishing, you know, existence. But I don't know how canon that is or if they just made that up because it was advantageous to the script of this movie.
That's actually, I'm sorry, but that's like a big part of Flash's superpowers is that not just like being fast and whatever, I watched the Flash TV show. In fact, after this podcast, I'm going to go watch tonight's episode. I've been dying to see it, but Flash has, through the Speed Force, is able not only to travel between time, but also through dimensions and stuff. So, yeah, he can enter in the Speed Force and go back in time and, like, change reality.
Well, I get
and,
the
like,
time travel part. It's the telepathy part. Like, can he Inception Batman in a dream? Well, like, can he impart an entire dream sequence into somebody else's brain?
It's clearly an alternate reality
because
I don't think we're going to see Superman become a Nazi leader with, you know, a bunch of minions and stuff.
Yeah.
So I think it's like a parallel universe where Flash broke through somehow to give him like just a premonition of something.
Well, see, here's my thought. And I could be wrong, just like any one of us. And mind you, these are just our opinions. But when that sequence is occurring, Superman says something very significant to Bruce or Batman while he takes off the hood, and he says, you know, she was my love, she was my world, and something else.
You took her away from me.
In my mind, with that and then with the appearance of Flash, for some reason, I got a vision of Injustice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really did, because you know what? I don't think that it could be a parallel. I think it actually could be a possible future.
Yeah.
Because of the fact that if you're familiar with the Injustice series, which is now in its fifth year for the DC Comics, the story goes that Superman and Lois Lane are married and they are having a child
expecting
on the way.
A child,
they're expecting
yeah.
a child. And just like I said, this is a spoiler ridden thing, so whatever.
And this has nothing to do with the movie per se.
This has nothing yeah. to do with the movie per se, but essentially, Joker tricks him into killing his wife and their unborn child and causing Superman to go into this downward spiral of.
And like blowing up Metropolis.
Metropolis, causing Superman to be this insane tyrant, you know, all powerful tyrant. So that couldn't be too far off if that does actually end up happening, because one of the things that Barry Allen or whoever the Flash is at the time, when he does come back, he says, you know, she's the key. She's important or something along the lines
yeah.
of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then he says, wait, am I too soon? Is this too soon? And
right.
Which for me, that kind of connected the dots to Injustice.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, what do you guys
think?
Well,
I mean, anything goes when you're talking about somebody from the future coming and mucking with the past. I mean, that's kind of a well-established trope within the genre. But the other thing that's, you know, compelling is in that dream sequence from, quote-unquote, a possible future, he says, she was my world. Later on in the film, during climactic battle scene with Doomsday,
yeah.
Superman does tell Lois Lane that yeah. she is his world.
Yep.
Yeah.
So that potential still exists, I think, is kind of an unstated truth, potential truth within the film.
Moving into the... So let's kind of jump out of the dreams a bit and go back into that, the first meet with Clark Kent and Bruce Wayne. Now, we were talking about a little bit of espionage stuff and stuff like that. There is a scene where Bruce Wayne does his best. So he needs to get into Lex Luthor's...
server room
computer
yeah,
system
like which is like on display copy. Looking very fancy, mind you. That's a nice server room.
He has his fridge
and right across the hall from the kitchen
yeah. exactly. And not even that, isn't that in like a library?
Yeah, it's in
some
a library
sorts?
It's very confusing what happens in that sequence from the espionage point of view
yeah. So he goes, he's invited to a Lex Luthor event where he's there, he's doing something of a celebration for a library.
Is that shiver again?
And so he goes and he realizes that he can try to steal some information from their servers, which happened to be at the library as well, and that's where he clumsily tries to do that. Now, my biggest takeaway from that was not just only his clumsiness and his inability to be smooth and suave, but it's also our first introduction
to
Wonder Woman.
Diana Prince.
Yes.
She's not Wonder Woman in the scene, but
no.
She is at this event. It's an event to honor Lex Luthor for being a philanthropist and a book lover.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to get up and give a speech, and Bruce Wayne and Alfred have concocted this scheme to utilize their cool technology to copy Lex Luthor's entire server system and all the data in it and take it back to the Batcave and analyze it and see what he knows that Bruce Wayne needs to know. And, you know, Wonder Woman in her alter ego form happens to also be at this event, because we learn later she's also looking for something that she believes Lex Luthor can at least point her in the direction of, that quote unquote is hers. You also have Clark Kent there, super hearing, super spying on the communication between Bruce
cool.
Wayne and
yeah,
Alfred.
Yeah.
Pretty good use of his super hearing.
So there is no question for Clark Kent, who is Batman.
Yeah.
That is true. And like we said, like Corey said, you know, he said that Bruce Wayne gets found out by not only two different other, one henchman number two, and the third person being Wonder Woman. It doesn't seem to work for me as far as...
That's not Bruce Wayne. Bruce Wayne would have had a distraction. Like, Bruce Wayne is brilliant. He's one of the most brilliant comic book characters of all time. And that even goes cross universes to Marvel. He's the world's greatest detective, and there's nothing by accident. It's planned to the T. He's like the Punisher, and he's Iron Man mixed into one. Like, everything is calculated, and
that was not.
He's no. just like, oh, I walk into server room, put yeah. computer on computer.
It was kind of bumbling.
And wait for 7 minutes.
There was a little bit of a precursor in the scene before that where Alfred is convincing him to do this espionage work as Bruce Wayne and not as Batman,
mm-hmm.
Indicating that he's more comfortable doing detective work, let's say, as Batman with the cape and cowl,
yeah.
not as Bruce Wayne. Alfred insists, because of something that happens a few scenes before, that you were just great as Bruce Wayne
yeah.
doing that. You don't have to put this costume on every time
yeah.
and be aggressive and crazy. This Batman is not so much the detective. He's not the good cop detective. He's the bad cop detective.
And that's a good point, because you did mention the scene before that, which we didn't really touch on. But there is a scene where Bruce Wayne is trying to find this particular individual, this particular crime lord or whoever he is. He's trying to hunt him down and try to find him. And they're in like this underground bare knuckle fight place. And he ends up winning some money, but I thought the way they went about doing that, making it seem like he's pretty well experienced, it was smooth for me, seeing him just walk up, speak in Russian to the other guy, and lay his phone down, and you don't know what's going on, but then he turns his phone up, and it's like, oh, shoot, he's been cloning the other guy's phone. I thought that was pretty smooth.
That was good. I know, I thought that was great.
Yeah.
It's like, what happened from there, from that point, to transition over into... Well, I guess I'll just put this here, walk away, and then, you know...
And let everybody and their mom see what I'm doing.
Exactly, see me walking out of this room.
What a terrible henchman. Like, she caught him, and that was like... it felt like that away. Was Luthor's number two. Like, oh, she sure. was in the movie a lot.
Yeah.
And she was just like, oh, well, okay, if you said you're supposed to be here, I guess I'll just go. Oh,
you just got lost in the server room.
Yeah, she didn't, like, report it. It didn't seem like...
I have to go sign off on the hors d'oeuvres.
Yeah, she didn't go put in a heat ticket to get security down there. That was 7 minutes. Like, that was at the beginning of the 7 minutes.
Mm-hmm. What did you think, Sean?
Oh, with that scene, I thought, you know, like I said, it was out of his comfort zone, and he was just, you know, more comfortable being Batman than Bruce Wayne. I think he's always trying to put on that persona. Trying to put on that persona of being Bruce Wayne, the playboy philanthropist, or... I can't ever say that word, but trying to be this guy that's...
We're philosophers. It's called philanthropist.
So. I can never say it. It's like, but
what
anyway.
The hell is what a philosopher while we're here?
Chadley?
A philosopher?
A philosopher.
It's a play on words.
Don't think about it. Let's move on.
Clever like that. But we're talking about Batman. It is interesting because, as with other iterations, here you've got... Which facade is more him? The Bruce Wayne facade, because it is a facade.
Yeah.
Or the Batman facade, because that's also a facade. This Batman is a shoot first, ask questions later.
Yep.
Literally,
I didn't
Batman.
Like that, man.
He will railroad you.
Mm-hmm. I didn't like
it. And if he kills you in the process, eh. Which is interesting, given kind of where Man of Steel left off, because Man of Steel is sort of the inciting incident, if you will, behind this entire story.
Oh, yeah.
Where
yeah.
you ultimately have Superman killing his enemy. And grieving immediately over having killed his enemy. Now you meet Batman in this movie. He has no problems killing anyone who's a perceived enemy who's standing in his way, up to and including Superman. Much of his quest in this film, at least initially, is to take this guy out.
That is true. We talked
if there
about
is a 1% chance
1%
that he could go bad, we've got to take him out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about his aggressiveness, and we talked about how in the previous non-spoiler review, that Batman just is a whole different animal in this one. And, you know, I don't think I vibe it really well. He's running around, shooting up everything. I do like his fighting style. We did talk about that earlier, the way he was portrayed as far as in his hand-to-hand combat. But, Corey, what did you think about his use of guns in this one?
I didn't like it. It's just weird imagining Batman with a gun that's shooting bullets, nonetheless. Yeah. Like, I'm okay with, like, a gun that shoots the gases and stuff like that. That makes a lot of sense. But
the rail gun in the car, in the Batmobile.
Yeah, yeah. Even
the Batwing.
Yeah, he was just blowing people up and throwing them in the gas tankers, and they're dying in these brutal deaths. And I feel like without explanation of that, it's confusing for me, like, because I've always just known and loved the Batman that's the line he does not cross.
Mm-hmm.
He'll put the Joker in jail 1,000 times, no matter, and that's, you know, part of the giant conflict that makes the character amazing. And then you go into this version where he's just blasting folks.
Yeah.
And it makes sense in the movie, you know, because that's another plot point they would have had to thrown in, which they already shoehorned as many plot twists and characters.
Yeah, there's
and
a lot going on in this movie.
Yeah.
And I think they Spider-Man 3'd it.
That's
there's just so much. You could have just taken the simple concept of Batman versus Superman and made an amazing film without Wonder Woman, without even Lex Luthor, you probably could have done. Like, I remember in one of the cartoons, one of the most amazing scenes is Batman lures Superman into the sewers for a fight. And there's like
away from the sun.
Yeah, and there's gas under there where if Superman uses his I-beams, the whole city goes up.
Yeah.
That's uncharacteristic of Batman, but he knows to leverage Superman's mm-hmm. emotions. Yeah. Superman will not use his I-beams, and that levels the playing field.
Sure. Yeah. Sean, what'd you think about our battle royale? Because it does finally happen.
Oh, yeah. Well, with the whole Batman actually facing off with Superman, I thought that was freaking awesome. I loved it. I think going back to what Corey said, it actually reminded me with Batman per se, Batman 89, the Tim Burton Batman was all about that. So that was my favorite Batman up until this point. And I feel like what I liked about this movie, going to Batman and now going to the Battle Royale, they combined all my favorite elements of Batman. They combined in the 89 Tim Burton Batman with the Arkham Batman, with, you know, Frank Miller, Dark Knight Batman. So it took a lot, and New 52. So I really liked all these elements, and I love Ben Affleck, so I was super happy with everything. I didn't mind that, because in all honesty, and this goes back to Batman Under the Red Hood, I always wonder why Batman wouldn't kill people. It's like, dude,
yeah,
I think you're stupid, Batman. I love Batman, but I always thought that was stupid, so I didn't mind at all. So with the Battle Royale, what Batman was doing with Superman, and going back to if there's a 1% chance, I thought that was great. I like how brutal he was. And then Superman didn't want to be brutal, but it's like, dude, you are like just ticking me off. I'm just like, if you want to play this game, I'll play this game. So I thought that was so great how brutal it was getting. I could have seen it go on longer, but I thought it was a good amount of time.
And the thing with that, kind of going back to Bruce Wayne, it is a little reminiscent to the Dark Knight Returns of Frank Miller comics, which is they're trying to pull a lot from. But in the Frank Miller comics, he's not using real bullets. He's using rubber bullets, which the head of the mutant gang makes a point to notate that. It's like, you know, you're scared because you're using these fake rubber bullets. Why can't you use regular bullets like a man? And so I think the switchover does kind of add to his aggressiveness, obviously. But in the end, when that fight does come down and you do see the grand finale fight, the Grand Royale, you know, it is something that just kind of seems to me like it's all over the place. I understand what he's trying to do. I understand what he's pushing to get Superman to that one point. But it doesn't seem like Batman is the grand tactician that we've seen. The grand tactician that we're used to. He's
supposed to be a master at that.
He is. You know, there's been several instances throughout comic history, throughout the television show, throughout the movies, where it seems like every instance that he does, every single plan that he makes, it almost has like divine intervention, because it falls into place like seamlessly, no matter what. And this one kind of seemed like there was a certain amount of parts that just didn't seem to fit for him. Like he was improvising it as he went along. I don't know. What
See,
did
I think
you think,
the
Chuck?
Battle Royale did have some of that divine intervention feel because they end up where he wanted them to end up the whole time, even though by that point they've gone up through the roof, down through the floor, through the wall, all around, because they've been fighting for a while in this abandoned building. But somehow they end up, you know, right where he wants him. Obviously, he makes that happen. But so I thought that it didn't necessarily show strategy.
Mm-hmm.
It did show preparation.
Mm-hmm.
It showed that he had prepared a multi-stage battle with this godlike figure that was his best bet at getting rid of him once and for all. The interesting thing is the trailers and the teasers kind of indicate that they have equal animosity as they're fighting.
Mm-hmm.
They actually don't. Mm-hmm. There's a whole other element of the plot that involves Lex Luthor... Jesse Eisenberg has kind of threatened, he throws Lois Lane off a really tall building, Superman saves her, and then he lets Superman know, oh, I've got your mom, she's gonna die in an hour unless you kill Batman. So he's supposed to go across the little waterway over to where the bat signal is showing, kill Batman, and so, you know, Martha Kent will be saved, allegedly. Superman being Superman, he already has his mind in a different place when he gets there, and he says, I have to get this guy to join with me. Like, I have to convince him not to fight. And, of course, Bruce Wayne's mind is set, and so they do have to fight.
Yeah.
And quite a bit before they get to sort of a detente moment that is a divine intervention moment. It's a happenstance that the last thing that Superman slash Clark Kent is thinking about before Batman is going to kill him with a kryptonite spear is his mom.
Oh, yeah.
Who happens to share a name.
Clark Kent's mom.
With Bruce Wayne's mother, you know.
I thought that was so great.
Mother.
I didn't like it. Explain, Sean. I want to hear the positive. Maybe you can change my
mind. Oh, yeah. Well, I totally knew and also needed to be reminded because of this movie that both Batman and Superman's with Superman's adopted mom, obviously, they share a same name. And I thought that was actually a very like tender moment. And it also brings back the beginning of the movie with, you know, Thomas Wayne, played by Jeffrey Dean Morgan, his last words is Martha. And then you see her eye, you know, pretty much the life coming out of her. And they bring that back in that scene. So I thought this guy was pretty much set. And then, like, when Lois steps in, it's like, oh, why do you, like, because Batman's like, why do you know that name? Like, what's that mean? Because it really strikes a nerve with him that, like, of all names, he would say Martha. So
yeah, he thinks that Superman's calling out his mom.
Yeah, exactly. That's like Batman's a big, yeah. big thing. So when they say that, then it's like, he cares about so much about, it's like, listen, it's like, at least save her. It's like, if you have to kill me, at least save her. And that just like really turns things around for Batman, and like it's like he realizes what he's doing and all that stuff. So I thought, to me, that was very powerful. Mm-hmm. I really love that whole parallel, and that goes back to even how when Batman and Superman are created, When You're Apart, how they always, even though they're different, they have a very parallel path in similarities. Even if you look at a lot of the animated movies, they look so identical when they're mm-hmm. not, when Batman's not wearing the mask, he looks like, you know, Clark Kent or Bruce Wayne. So, yeah. Like in Batman, Batman Superman Public Enemies, it's like, yeah, the same. They look exactly the same when Batman has his cowl off. It's funny, but yeah.
What do you think, Corey?
I thought that it was an overreaction on Batman's part. Like, I don't know why that mm-hmm. confused him so much, hearing the name Martha, because before the fight begins, Superman calls him Bruce. Bruce at this point knows that Superman's Clark Kent. So you got to assume that there's intelligence there. It doesn't take but a Google search to find out that Batman's mom's name was Martha. So him saying that, why the hell, if that's his last words?
Well, I think what he says is, save Martha.
Yeah.
Right? And I think that's what throws Bruce off is, wait a minute, she's been dead for 40 years or, you know, 35 years, however long.
Yeah.
What are you talking about? It throws him for a loop. It's like nothing he would ever have expected or anticipated from this fight. Is Superman at the end of his rope by this point is going to say, save your dead mother.
Yeah.
But I think that's what causes him to stop.
But that goes to the idea of who Batman is as far as being the master tactician. He would have, in my mind, in a perfect world, in my mind, he would have prepared for this. He would have understood this. He would have kind of not allowed, if this was his endeavor, if this was his mission, he would have pretty much, you know, sought out all contingency plans and made sure that nothing was going to happen to hinder this. And this kind
hinder
of adds
what?
Him finishing the job, him killing Superman.
So he just wouldn't have heard him say it.
Well, because I think before that, though, even in talking about the tactician and that fight in general, you know, he was expecting that fight. Why was he even playing around with turrets and whatever the first thing he tried was? Before, he should have led with the blast to weaken him. He knew that that was the secret sauce. He knows bullets don't kill him. Why go through the horse and pony show of having him walk through the turrets and all that and then get his ass kicked for a few minutes before he finally gets that gun together to shoot him and then start? If he would have just hit him with a kryptonite bubble, I mean, I know that this, you know, it's a movie, you know, it's got to go. But you can still do that and make it fair to give Batman the best shot of, you know.
Sure. And I would say that the entire setup to that fight is one of the biggest problems with the movie. The whole, oh, Lex Luthor knows that Batman is doing all of this stuff to prepare and that tonight's the night. And so he has Martha Kent kidnapped on that night. Because Superman's been out of the public eye. He goes on a bit of a soul-searching journey in some of the middle of the movie, and he has not visibly returned by this point, but somehow the stars have aligned because Robot Batman turns on the bat signal, and Lex Luthor is ready with all of his plans to send his goons out to Smallville and capture that old lady and get, you know, Lois Lane up on the top of this building to throw her off so he can pull a fast one. It was just, I have a huge problem with the way Lex Luthor is presented in this film. Acted, written, all of the above, just didn't feel genuine hardly ever. And I think that that really kind of unsettles the entire battle sequence. Like, wait a minute, Batman is a pawn of Lex Luthor's, even though that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, and Luthor is pretty much detective in the world, and you're getting this millennial version of Lex Luthor. I think that was part of the thing with him too. He was portrayed as a very youthful, like very immature kid, and so you have different things. You have, you know, middle-aged Superman still figuring things out. You have very young Lex Luthor, and then you have old man Batman. None of them really. I didn't get like a real sense that Luthor rivaled anybody as much as he was just being a douchebag,
you know? Right.
Yeah, and speaking of Lex Luthor, you know, obviously we have the transition over where you see in the trailers that Lex Luthor is part of the reason why we get the creature that comes out, which is confirmed as Doomsday. And so we get the insane battle between Doomsday, Superman, Batman, and the introduction of Wonder Woman in full gear.
Who is the highlight of the film?
Who is definitely the highlight of the film? Because
I can't wait for her movie, man.
Honestly, I focused way more, and not because she's a woman or anything, it's not like that, but I focused way more on that fight sequence when not only she appeared, but that music kicked in too. Yeah. It was like the music, and with her, fed into the idea that this is somebody you need to pay attention to, and she really did like bring a whole different environment to the to the screen.
If they gave her more screen time, she would have stolen this movie out from under all of their feet.
I think so too.
Here's one thing I noticed, and when we go to see these pre-screenings pretty often. Now, when we saw Star Wars, obviously the crowd was hooting and hollering every second they got a chance. When we even saw Deadpool, like just laughter and a lot of like aha, like that was amazing moments. Like
to where we didn't even hear everything
moments.
Else.
In Batman, the crowd was super tame. Like they the only key moment I remember where people were like, yeah, and I was actually with them was the Wonder Woman scene.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like people really got behind that. And
yeah, when she comes out in her full gear.
That was awesome.
Yeah, I mean she is, you do not mess with that chick.
Yeah.
And she is there to fight and do some right in a world of wrong.
They didn't damsel in distress her.
No, not at all.
They made her very much the savior of the two.
Oh yeah.
And when she's portrayed throughout the movie, when you see her as Diana Prince, you know, when she has her interaction, because she does have another interaction with her and Bruce Wayne where she explains that, oh, well, you know, the thing that, because she ends up stealing that device that Bruce Wayne so clumsily put into that server room. And then she ends up like breaking into his car and putting it back in there without him noticing. But I thought that the way they introduced her and continued to have those interactions with her and the screen and the viewers, I thought was pretty well done because they didn't give anything away too much. They gave out little pieces here and there as far as, you know, she's somebody of note that you need to make sure you keep in mind because she's going to continue to pop up. And then you have the reveal of the files that Batman ends up stealing from LexCorp. Let's talk about those files real quick.
Hell yeah.
So we have a file on pretty much Lex Luthor has these four different files on his computer, and they both have very unique symbols. Very unique symbols.
Oddly enough, he does not have a file on Superman, which I found to be extremely odd.
I didn't think about that.
That is true.
Because that's like his entire purpose is to try to figure out how to harvest kryptonite to poison and possibly kill a Kryptonian, a.k.a. Superman. But his metahuman files include four individuals that are not Superman.
Mm-hmm. Well, because we already know who Superman is.
Well, I mean, yeah. Okay, meta.
So the four files that we do see, we see the file for Wonder Woman, which is right at the very beginning.
Yep.
We see a file for The Flash. Mm-hmm. We see a file for
Aquaman,
and then we see a file for
Cyborg.
Kind of going from the top, I mean, obviously we knew Wonder Woman, who Wonder Woman is, so there's no surprise there. Let's go ahead and skip over to the next one. The Flash. How are you guys feeling about this guy playing the Flash? This is probably our first iteration. This is our first view of this particular actor playing the Flash. What do you guys think?
I like the Flash symbol.
Yeah, I want you to go.
Oh, okay. I love the Flash TV show. I love Grant Gustin, and he's it was really jarring seeing a new Flash on there, especially with Ezra Miller's longer hair. He's definitely a very different looking Flash. I have no problem with that per se, but at the same time, it is still weird with the Flash being one of my favorite shows, mind you. Seeing that, so I'm like, oh, it's cool seeing the Flash on the big screen, but it's not the TV show Flash. So that's it. I have mixed feelings about that.
Corey, do you think that it's going to hurt DC overall in the long run?
Absolutely.
When it comes to casting this individual as the Flash, when Grant Gustin has already created a long run already name for this particular character.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know how many times I'm going to have to explain to my aunts and uncles and my mom and my grandpa, why is there two Flashes now? Which one's the real Flash? And I'm going to have to explain, no, okay, they're not tied together. This isn't like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Mom. It's all like separated. Mm-hmm. So there's actually two Flashes. This one got his powers this way. But I like the other Flash better.
That Grant Gustin boy looks great in that suit.
Yeah, I don't think that was a good enough excuse on why it couldn't work. I think it's short-sighted, like this whole DCCU is. They're trying to play catch-up in... Although I really hoped that this movie was going to be much better, I don't think they're going to catch up at the rate they're going with Marvel. Because Marvel took their time and they built an empire, and like they didn't just blow all their chips in the first movie. Like they give you little glimpses or a name drop. They didn't just go straight into all the files and stuff in the first one and give you four superheroes and three villains.
Yeah, because quite frankly, these files, it's kind of a random collection of video clips. Mm-hmm. And you have, on the one hand, you really have the origin of Cyborg, mm-hmm. which that movie doesn't come out until, what, 2019?
2020.
Yeah. 2020. Yep. So you already have his origin briefly, heavily CGI'd in this one. You have not quite an origin for the other ones. It's sort of they're already somehow established in their abilities. And you get a glimpse of each of them, and that's it. Aside from Wonder Woman, obviously.
Yeah. Real quick, I have to say, isn't it cool that Cyborg was created by Miles Dyson from Terminator 2?
man who created Cyberdyne. There you go. Yes,
it makes sense.
Yeah. The other video that we did get a chance to see was the Aquaman little clip that they had there, and that shows Aquaman. It looks like somebody's going into a wreckage that's down deep below under the water. And
so the Titanic, of course.
It looked like the Titanic for me. Yeah. I was like, okay. Did it not look like Jason Momoa was struggling to do that scene?
It clearly looks like Jason Momoa holding his breath underwater.
It did. Okay,
and not like, I'm an Atlantean who can breathe underwater or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, it did not appear natural.
It looked like he was struggling to actually make the scene work.
I didn't even notice that. That's a good point. What I did notice was how he comes out from the rocks like a fish does in a tank, and he's sitting there looking around all ominous. And, you know, there's a camera was sitting right here, like a couple feet from his face. So in my opinion, I'm like, oh, this is cool. Like some footage where, like, you know, it's the camera looking at him. I didn't realize that this was a physical camera 3 feet from his face that he sits there and looks at for a few minutes and then decides to break.
Yeah.
And zip off.
Yeah. Like he wanted to make sure they got all angles of his face on that camera before he decided to smash it.
Long, flowing locks of hair.
Yeah, I was going to say, along with his hair going all over the place.
That said, I'm glad they picked Momoa. I think he will be a good one compared to something else they could have done.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Jason Momoa in this role. I just think that the way they did that clip doesn't do it justice for me. No pun intended. Mm-hmm. But, I think he could actually rock the role. The problem is that when they film this scene, it's like they were in somebody's pool somewhere and they're like, oh, you know what we could do? We could do a scene where Jason goes out of his ship. Jason, you here? Yeah, go down in the bottom.
Hold your breath.
Hold your breath for like 20 seconds real quick. And we'll get you spearing something really cool. You know, he just looked like he didn't have that fluidity of somebody who's an Atlantean. Like you look at Atlanteans and they move quickly in the cartoons and so forth. Mm-hmm. They move quickly. They're used to being in the water, so they're quick, you know, however, like fish. And it looks like he was just like kind of floating there for a second. The only thing that moved quick was his jab, mm-hmm. which seemed pretty powerful because he blows that dang camera away. Mm. I don't know. What do you think, Chad?
Yeah, it seemed very unnatural. It didn't sell the character to me. I do think he's a really interesting choice for that character, more so than, say, Ezra Miller for The Flash, who I'm no offense to him, but I'm really not fond of what I've seen there, especially because I'm also a fan of the TV show. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, it remains to be seen how they're all going to work together, what's going to bring them together, because that doesn't happen by the conclusion of this movie. You do have a brief conversation between Bruce Wayne and Diana Prince, where there's an indication that he now feels an urge to put the call out to these individuals that they've seen in the video files, to band together to face some unforeseen future conflict.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because he's seen something in a dream sequence.
Yeah.
You know, so you have the indication that they're going to reach out to them. You know, it remains to be seen. Will they work well together? I don't know. Will they work well separately? I really don't know.
Yeah. And going back to the battle, the main battle at the end that we see with Doomsday, I do have to agree that, you know what, in that entire fight sequence, Wonder Woman rocks it. She is the woman who is going to town on everything about Doomsday, chopping them to pieces and everything, going just crazy.
I love how when she gets, like, punched at one point, she gets, like, creamed and she just smiles.
She is like
so playful about
it.
War.
It's like she's enjoying it too much for me.
Valhalla. Because she comes from Amazons, who come like an ancient race of warriors.
Yep.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I do compare it very much to Vikings, who,
yeah.
You know, that's the most honorable thing you can do is die in battle. So I think I love the fact that she was happy.
She's
in
the DC equivalent to Thor.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so she is the female Thor, or Thor is the male version of Wonder Woman.
So obviously we talked about the kryptonite spear. We talked about, you know, how
him picking it up and just throwing it and then going away. Come on.
Yeah.
Why would Bruce Wayne do that? That's a very dangerous weapon.
Not to mention it's probably took a lot of money to make, too.
Yeah, he would take that, put it back in the vault, tuck it away when he knows Superman's going to turn on him and get him in the future.
He wasn't just, like, sitting on the porch with a little knife.
Or at the very least, keep it away from, you know, Lex Luthor or somebody else who could get their hands on
he
it.
He just threw it and then just went about his day and then, like, oh, crap, we need it. And then luckily, Lois Lane can find it.
Lois actually has a decent contributing role to the fight. Because she does have the damsel in distress moment. She is thrown off of a building, and Superman saves her. But then she has several moments throughout the various battles,
mm-hmm.
In the second half of the film where she comes through in the clutch.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And speaking of clutch, you know, speaking of that scene, the big scene that occurs at the end of the film.
Oh, yeah.
You know, as we talk about it, you know, we got to mention it is a spoiler-rich film. We have Superman grabbing hold of that kryptonite, you know, spear, and he goes at Doomsday and, you know, as... He
makes a sacrifice play. Yeah,
exactly, as Wonder Woman is holding him down with the lasso of truth, and Batman shoots Doomsday up with one last canister of kryptonite. He goes at and stabs him right through the heart, but... Something happens.
What happens? I might have fallen asleep at that part. Sean, what happens?
Well, when he impels them, Doomsday's... and by the way, right before that, Wonder Woman cuts off Doomsday's hand and he grows like a big spike, which he then, when Superman impels him, Doomsday impels Superman right in this S symbol, is a hope symbol.
We mentioned this was a spoiler review,
yes.
Right? Okay.
Yes.
This is a spoiler? Okay.
And as Superman is killing Doomsday, pushing in the spear, he ultimately, with that kryptonite, is also, you know, harming him at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
It ultimately kills them both, which is very much the 90s all over again. Yes.
Corey, how do you feel about them killing off Superman?
Hated it.
Hated it.
just because
hated it.
It's just like they threw everything in the kitchen sink. Save some of your ammo, save some of your best things. Like, the death of Superman is a great arc to explore in the future.
Yeah.
And like, the mm-hmm. thing that everybody remembers about the death of Superman, I said this at the movie theater, is that image, that poster that came out of all the heroes carrying that casket,
mm-hmm.
'cause it was a symbol. It was significant to all the heroes too. It was more important for them than the people. And you just killed that. You know, now there was a nice little scene where you have the people paying tribute to a guy they just nuked 5 seconds ago.
Yeah.
And then you got his actual funeral with the grassroots stuff. But just you missed that chance of having the Flash and the Green Lantern and Batman carrying that casket down a paraded street. That's something I would have loved to have seen on the big screen. Now we're not going to get it.
Well, as much as I would love to see that too, I think I know that that's a big storyline. The problem with like with the Death of Superman storyline, and they tried to do this DC animated. The first movie was Superman Doomsday, and they did that all as a standalone film, and that was animated, and it had some good moments. But the way they did that, which was weird, that they now with all these good animated DC films, they didn't do what you just said, like all the superheroes with the caskets. Why was it only Superman in that entire movie? There was no Batman, no Wonder Woman. This movie, in live action, actually did that better than that anime one. That's, I don't know what it is about The Death of Superman when it comes to adaptations that it's so hard to get right. And I know there's so many elements. It's like The Death and Return, in which I'm guessing Justice League will deal with, whether it's part one or in part two. I think it's just like hard to really resonate what so many issues we're trying to do within that time frame, within a year of Superman's death and resurrection. Mm-hmm. So I think in a live action format, and I kind of thought about this even before seeing the movie, if they were to kill Superman, which they did, I would feel like it would be very impactful in setting up Justice League, and at least having Batman and Wonder Woman there, you know, just kind of, and it is the catalyst of why Batman wants to bring more people to prepare, and also that little setup for Justice League. So as much as I agree, Corey, on that, I really feel like it was so powerful, and it just really brought me back to the 90s of what, how much I did miss Superman. And I feel like it was kind of like the movie's version saying, listen, Superman gets so much crap for Man of Steel and all these other movies, so we're going to kill him, and let's see if you guys appreciate him. Because I felt like that's what the comics did.
Well, the comics, he was gone for a significant period of time.
And he'll be for another year now.
Well, yeah, because
yeah, he has various,
over a year,
he has various fill-in
yeah.
Superman, mm-hmm. Superboy, you know, whatever. Yeah. They come on the scene to fill the gap that he's left behind. Mm-hmm. It's really interesting when you're watching the film, and you know that Doomsday's in the movie, and you know in the comic books what Doomsday did when he first came on the scene, you know, but you're thinking, okay, they're already trying to shoehorn in significant elements of The Dark Knight Returns, mm-hmm. which is like the most well-known Batman story, I think, aside from the origin, perhaps.
Oh, yeah.
Comic book fans generally know that one. Non-comic book fans sometimes know that one. Same thing with The Death of Superman. To put elements of both of those, but not the full scope of either of them, into the same movie, when you're also giving at least brief introductions to four other members of the Justice League. Mm. Wonder Woman gets a little bit more play, which is very well done again. Mm-hmm. The other three, you know, not as much time on screen or as much depth of development, you know, but it's just, it is, I agree with you, Corey, it's a lot to try to take in. Mm-hmm. And given the plot holes in other areas, Lex Luthor, it really overall to me really didn't quite work. It's sort of like, you know, it's like when you have, you know, maybe a youth sports team and they don't win the game and you're like, well, you played your heart out. Good job. But you didn't win the game.
Yeah.
You know, like I ended the movie feeling, you know, you really tried your hardest. There were some elements that I really enjoyed, but you didn't win the game for me.
Zack Snyder wins the participation award.
I thought, in another, just tagging on the end of the Death of Superman, if you're going to do a Death of Superman, just end the movie with them putting him in the ground. The teaser at the end of the dirt moving, I know he's coming back, but you don't have to show it, spoon feed us that he's coming back. Leave him dead for more than 3 minutes. They didn't even do that. We know that he's already moving dirt on his casket before the dirt has even been put on all the way. So
I thought it was very Inception move, actually. Did it move, or did we just think it move, actually? It's like,
is the top still spinning?
I thought that was great, though. I
think the dirt definitely moved. It was hard to tell if the lid of the coffin was moving or just the dirt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which kind of threw me for a bit. I'm like, why is the dirt only the thing that's... What did he... I don't know. That was weird to me. I was like, was he going to blast out of his coffin all of a sudden or something? Yeah. But, you know,
All things considered,
you know, it was an okay film. You know, on a ranking from 1 to 5, Corey, what would you give it?
1 to 5? Oh, man. I was expecting 1 to 10, but 1 to 5... well, let me see. I'll take my 1 to 10. I'll divide it by 2.
Yeah, it's easy to do that.
So that'll give me a 2.5.
Okay. 2.5. Chad?
Solid 2.
Solid 2.
Oh, man.
Sean?
I'm going to be opposite of Corey. I'm going to times that by 2 and give it a 5 out of 5 because I absolutely love the film, and I actually can't wait to see it again for the third time for me.
Mm-hmm. And myself, I give it probably a 2.5, 3 out of 5, honestly. They gave a really good effort. And in the end, even though it didn't deliver visually, it was still a stunning film. And, you know, thematically, it was.
Well, and I think to Sean's point, there are going to be people who love this film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because there is a lot to love in it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's also a lot, if you're not ready to love it just yet, you know, there's a lot that you can criticize.
Oh, yeah, of course. I agree with both points. I think I said something real quick before we were doing this. Like, I was telling people, listen, like, there's people like me that love Man of Steel, and this is even better than that. And that's why I gave it the ranking I did, because I loved Man of Steel. But for people that didn't, it might sway you a little bit, but not so much, because if you're really against Man of Steel and Zack Snyder's thing, you'll totally, it won't sway you that much. You really have to like what they're setting up.
Well, I think it's really funny because I was also a big fan of Man of Steel. If I was giving Man of Steel a rating, I would give it 4 out of 5 because there are some points in that are, you know, could have been fixed. It's interesting. I'm sitting here thinking, I'm like, you know what? Lex Luthor himself lost 2 of those 5.
Oh, wow.
All on its own.
And I'm not even invested into the series, and I just did not like him. Like, despised him like they wanted me to not like him. I just didn't like him. I thought he was annoying.
Yeah, it was just like, it doesn't quite fit.
Yeah, it didn't quite fit. I think it's the movie, to Sean's point, if you're in the DC, you know, if you're locked in, you're probably going to like it. If you're just a fan of movies in general, you'll probably sit somewhere in the middle. Rotten Tomatoes is coming out swinging hard on this movie, and it's in the low 30s.
Yeah.
Still not as bad as Fan Four Stick.
Well, and keep in mind, we're recording this podcast within the first, 6 hours after the embargo has lifted. So perhaps not all of the reviews have even been published yet.
Yeah.
But like Corey said, with all things considered, it is a film for those who love the series and the franchise and just want to see what DC is drawing up to do. And you know what? Here's to hoping that, you know what, things get better. But you know what? For us here at the Filmlosophers, Corey Vincent of Video Game Bang and Sean Long, we want to wish you guys a great rest of your night and
go see it.
Go see
Give it,
it
a think for yourself.
Oh, yeah. It might be Full Justice or Just Suck, depending on how you look at it.
Yeah. Class dismissed.